This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Trying to put on the show.
It was going to happen eventually.
Yeah.
You don't live by the skin of your teeth for that long. You don't survive with your fingernails dug into the ledge. You don't ride the edge and live dangerously as the Seahawks do without it eventually biting you in the butt, and that is exactly what happened last night in the desert.
Yeah, you can't be the Wondolowski's going across a tightrope, you know, across a canyon unless you've got some... Did I get the name wrong of that family?
I believe so. I believe Wondolowski is a soccer player.
Oh, yeah. That's
the
kind
flying
of...
Walenskis.
Yeah, the Walenskis.
I believe it's the flying Walenskis.
Whatever the case... Listen, they're not worth remembering because when you watch it, you know it's going to happen because they've got all the safety nets and things. But when you do a tightrope walk over the entire NFL season, eventually you are going to get got. And that was what happened last night to the Seahawks, Danny. And it's unfortunate. Some of the issues, though, that we've known about, at some point they were going to cost them, especially when they've played a number of close games thus far.
It was an excruciatingly – it was an exasperating loss. It really was. And we'll get into all of the different ways. There were a couple of – kind of question, one questionable penalty, one dumb penalty that really hurt Seattle. There was a number of defensive lapses that aren't that far out of the ordinary, a very uncharacteristic performance from Russell Wilson. And I come away from it and say, well, you know what? It took all of that for them to lose this game. I'm not that discouraged, even by the way they lost. I don't think they should have lost this game. But it's not the kind of loss that makes me rethink where their season is headed.
And that's a fair way to look at it. The sky is not falling. I am really frustrated this morning because the Cardinals were far from perfect in this one, too.
You let them get back into the game.
Yeah.
You played about as perfect offensively as you can play outside of settling for field goals on two red zone possessions. You were an absolute buzzsaw for a half. And then what we've wondered, and kind of the question, when your offense isn't excellent, do you have enough to win? And the answer in this game was no. Once their offense stopped being excellent, this team didn't have enough to win.
And you, you did that. You puked. You had opportunities that were handed to you by Arizona. I mean, let's just start with the last one we saw. Cliff Kingsbury iced his own kicker. You know? And you weren't able to take advantage of it because a little bit later, Russell Wilson just throws... Of all the interceptions he threw on Sunday, I would say the most mind-numbing.
If Seattle goes down and kicks a field goal after that missed field goal, if Seattle wins that game, they and I think that's what all of us expected to happen, like, oh my gosh, you got to get out of jail free card, just like when Zuerlein missed that field goal last year and Seattle won on Thursday night, just like when San Francisco missed that field goal in overtime and allowed Seattle to win that Monday night game. You felt, if they go down and win it, does it change how you feel about everything? Do we come in here this morning and say, yep, this team's just team of destiny, they're riding that? I don't think it changes what we saw. I don't think it changes the trajectory for this season, but man, it makes it more frustrating.
Oh, definitely.
Hit 41-yard kick, and he just hooked. Oh, he missed it.
Right, and I remember seeing that, thinking to myself, of course, this is a classic Seahawks game. This was actually spoiled to me on Twitter. I saw the Cardinals beat writer for ESPN, I think his name is Josh Weinfuss, tweet that the kick had been missed. And I was a little annoyed that the spoiler alert had happened, but I also felt a little bit better because I was closing my eyes as the kick was kicked because he had made the first one, and it's 41 yards. It's definitely makeable. And Zane Gonzalez is a good kicker, but that was one of many opportunities that the Cardinals gift wrapped for you, and you were unable to take advantage because you were doing your own exchange of gifts.
Your offense had started sputtering at that point. It really
it was a bad
had.
Second half.
Yeah, they scored on one possession in the second half, and that drive took an incredible catch by Tyler Lockett on a fourth and two. Seattle goes for it from the Arizona three. They get that touchdown. It was the only time they scored in the second half. Your offense started sputtering, and you certainly didn't have enough to make up for that. And a team that held a 10-point lead with 6 minutes, 44 seconds to go ends up losing with 15 seconds left in overtime. They had two overtime possessions. You do not usually get that. They had two overtime possessions, couldn't find points on either one of them. After the game, here was what Pete Carroll had to say.
We had our shots, and you know, we take such pride in finishing well and doing things right down the stretch and executing and making the other team out-execute us. It didn't feel like that tonight. It didn't feel like we were able to force that issue in our favor. It's hard to win them all, and we're going to keep trying. And it's tough to lose a division game, but they played their tails off tonight, and you can see why they're a good team and they're hard to deal with.
They sure did have their shots, Danny. And let's start with Russ. Three interceptions for the first time since, I believe, December of 2017 against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Those interceptions were mind-numbing, all of them. I didn't like any one of them. I thought that the first one that he threw, I know that they said that they have been practicing to throw that way, but you're lobbing a ball to the sideline, you know?
He thought he had it, right? Like, Russ thought he had it. He thought that Arizona's defense was confused. You had three receivers out there. He thought it was a gimme, and he hit it like a gimme putt. And Budabaker read it and made a beeline for it. I didn't find myself mad at any of the interceptions. I thought the last one was forced. I thought the first two, it's just playing the game. Those are going to happen when you do as much ad-libbing as Seattle does. I didn't feel Russell was careless with the ball until the last interception.
I understand that. The second one he explained as a play that they will try to do all the time. It's frustrating that two were in the end zone. The second one, there might have been miscommunication where DK stopped running. It still was intercepted, and it did not seem particularly close to DK Metcalf. So at first glance, it was a definitely hard one to stomach. And the last one, I understand he could say, well, Tyler was hot. No one had any idea he was throwing the football. He just threw it before anyone had even looked. None of the receivers had even started to turn around at that point, and it went right to Isaiah Simmons, who finally did something as a rookie. So that's where I start. I understand the idea that, okay, maybe this is on brand with some of the things that Russ tries to do, but the first interception and the third interception, I thought, were very, very non-Russell Wilson.
Is the story of this game, and this can open up, you can text in 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Is the story of this game that Seattle's offense was running on fumes and sputtered in the second half? Or is it that the defense, again, showed kind of what we all worried about, that they're not going to be able to get that stop when you need it? And in fact, they didn't get any of the stops you needed, and they had a couple of different opportunities. Which ends up being the story of this game? I go to the offense, and I think that's probably what makes me more encouraged coming out of this loss, because I think that the reason they lost, they're 1 3-and-2 conversion away from winning this game. I mean, of all of the different other things, 1 3-and-2 conversion, and they didn't have their starting running back. And Carlos Hyde, who I thought was really tough, gets stuffed, but they're a 2-yard run on third down away from winning this game, and I'm not going to freak out about it.
Why did they run every single time on that series? And look, I like Hyde too, but a stretch play to Carlos Hyde does not seem to be his forte. You also have Russell Wilson, and you said after the game against the Vikings you weren't going to take the ball out of his hands. It's a new week. That I was hoping that was going to be an entire season thing.
I wondered about, on the third down, whether they would play action. But the reason they did it is because that's the right clock management. If you're going to bleed the clock, that's what you do. Arizona has two timeouts. You want to get everything out of that, because if at 3rd-and-2 you try a play action and it's incomplete, well, then you're looking at punting it back to them with almost full 2 minutes left on the clock. It's a much different. I think they got caught a little bit. That's why they run it. It was sound clock management. It certainly doesn't fit with put the ball and make sure that your quarterback has a role in winning or losing the game. But that was sound rationale that they used. It just ended up biting them in the butt. Which do you think it was? Is this about their offense or their defense coming out of this
game? We knew
game?
All these things about their defense, right? So it's hard to say, oh my goodness, the defense. We knew this is exactly what it is. Every single game this season, they have had issues to get after the passer. They have had issues making stops in big moments. And while they did get some stops, they got the stop on the fourth line, the fourth and goal to go situation after DK Metcalf had run down Budabaker. Like, they had some moments, but the moments are never going to be enough. Yes, I'm with you. I think this was a matter of the offense not succeeding when it needed to in the second half and Russ being more careless than we're used to.
It's such an interesting question. I guess the third choice would be destiny, right? That eventually, if you live dangerously for long enough, that you are due to take one of these in the shorts. That you can't win three different games on a play in the final 30 seconds and not have it eventually come back and bite you in the tuchus. Like, the law of percentages of odds means it's eventually going to even itself out.
You're not supposed to feel comfortable in these late game situations. Oh, yep, they're going to miss the field goal. Obviously, we know how this one goes out. You know, this is not some repeating network television show where generally every single week you're going to get the same plot line. No, this is the NFL. Eventually, that was going to come bite them in the tuchus.
It is Danny and Gallant. We're going to have Brock here join us at 8 o'clock for Blue 42. Pete Carroll will be here at 9:30. Michael Bumpus will be in that final hour of the show as well. It's time to tell you what to watch for.
What to watch for every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
Played three World Series games since we last talked.
Yes.
The Dodgers have won two of them, including last night's game. They win 4-2. Clayton Kershaw, showing he was as clutch as Paul Gallant has always believed, leaves the game to a standing ovation. Home runs by Max Muncy, Jock Peterson.
He allowed two runs.
He did, but he left with the lead. Everybody salutes him. He's changed his postseason. He's changed the N-word. No, not that N-word. The different N-word. The narrative about him. Yeah, I realized just after that came out of my mouth that I was talking about the narrative, so you can now slap me across the face. The Dodgers are up 3-2. They only must win one of the next two games to claim their first World Series championship since 1988.
They're way better than the Rays, and I think the talent discrepancy has been apparent. I'm glad that you mentioned Saturday. Saturday's game was one of the best baseball games I've ever seen. That was an awesome back-and-forth kind of effort. I can't believe that the Rays actually found a way to win it, and honestly, they won it with the Dodgers sort of puking all over themselves at the very end with a couple of errors in the field. But that was an unbelievable game. It's been a fun series thus far. Honestly, I did not think that the Rays would be as competitive as they've been.
What to watch for?
Around the NFC West, the San Francisco 49ers murdered the Patriots. Woof. 33-6. It was not even that close. Cam Newton threw three interceptions. He got benched for Jarrett Stidham, who threw an interception. They can't move the football, Danny. I guess we give San Francisco credit for winning in such convincing fashion, but they were not even tested. This, to me, was a lot like the Cardinals going up against the Cowboys on Monday night. New England seemed to roll over and die pretty early.
I can't wait to listen to Boston Sports Radio today. I cannot wait to hear what they have to say, because they are going to have the knives out in full effect. That was a pathetic effort. They looked awful, and at one point, I thought Cam was going to cry. Like, at one point, they showed him over on the sidelines, and it was inexplicable, some of the stuff he did. I cannot reconcile what we saw with what he looked like in week two against Seattle. All as accurate as he looked against the Seattle, is he broken again? Was he not that good to begin with, and it was just Seattle's defense?
It might have been that. The mechanics looked awful from Newton in this game, too, so I wonder about the shoulder. And tonight in the NFC West, you have the Are They Frauds Bowl between the Rams and the Bears. The Bears, of course, 5-1. The Rams 4-2. Neither have played anybody.
Are they Frauds Bowl?
Yeah, that's the Are They Frauds Bowl. Trademark.
Who's it sponsored by? It should be like some internet security protection, like malware protection.
Yeah, that would be a good one.
A Norton antivirus.
For now, it's sponsored by my eyebrows. So, the Are They Frauds Bowl. Can't wait for that one tonight. Nick Foles, Jared Goff, woohoo!
I'll tell you what, if your eyebrows are sponsoring it, it's a fuzzy endorsement.
Uh-huh. They are fuzzy. Caterpillars even.
What to watch for?
Antonio Brown, we spent a good chunk of last week talking about him. He's not coming to Seattle.
Thank God!
Everybody just breathe a sigh of relief.
The only good news from this weekend in football.
He's reached an agreement to join the Bucs, who, if you watched them yesterday, they got no shortage of weapons. In the filed away in the stories that will never be written was an alternative story I wrote for 710sports.com last night. Maybe I'm to blame. You never write your story early with the Seattle Seahawks, and it was about how Seattle's receivers, well, they'll run by you. They'll run you down, as DK Metcalf did, and they don't need Antonio Brown. That was going to be my story for this game, that Tyler Lockett was awesome, DK Metcalf's effort was unbelievable, and this team does not need Antonio Brown. I still don't think they need him.
We didn't mention Lockett in that first segment. 15 catches for 200 yards, 3 touchdowns. only two first half touchdowns, so a bit of a step back from his performance against Dallas. He was incredible in this one, and you know, I wonder about players and their motivations after a week where there was a lot of talk about Antonio Brown. Was Lockett maybe a little extra motivated for this one? Maybe we'll never know, but that was a really awesome performance by him, especially that last touchdown. I can't believe he got his feet down, Danny.
I think this reflects teams taking into account DK Metcalf and what's going to happen if they ignore or overlook or think that Tyler Lockett is a lesser threat. I think Seattle has I think they have the best 1-2 punch of deep threats in the league, and that's even knowing that Dallas is pretty formidable. That is what to watch for. It's time to bring in the professor, John Clayton, for our morning drive.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by DivorceLawyersForMen.com.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, what's your biggest takeaway from last night's Seahawks loss?
No hits on the quarterback. I think that was very distinct. I mean, 48 dropbacks by Kyler Murray, and he wasn't hit. And, of course, I mean, the one hit that was costly, even though I thought Benson Mayoa did some pretty good job of, you know, trying to put some pressure on, and I think he's done a good job this year, was the penalty on the field goal attempt, or the penalty on the one play that, you know, he had two penalties on that field goal attempt, and all of a sudden, boom, you know, everything's, they get the extra chance, they, you know, get the field goal, and next thing you know, it goes into overtime and all that crazy stuff. So I think what it does prove is that John Snyder probably needs to be looking around to see what he can pick up this week and this week only on the pass rush to try to get something, you know, ready for the Buffalo game in another week.
From the 206, my mom went to bed early and missed the whole second half. I think she's the smartest person in the world. I think that's probably pretty accurate. John, you mentioned the Benson Mayoa penalty. That might have been the most, turn out to be the most decisive play.
Second
game.
Most.
Yeah.
You know why? The most decisive was the one where David Moore kind of got the holding penalty on the play that DK Metcalf won the game.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That penalty, although Moore earned every bit of that hold.
Yeah.
Like, there's sometimes where you're like, I don't know if that's, you watched it and you're like, yeah, he grabbed the dude and turned him around and he could have made the play. Do you think Mayoa tried to do that? Do you think he would have tried to hop over the line of scrimmage had he not jumped offsides? Because I wondered if he was just reacting to the fact that he knew he was offsides and kind of got caught in between. Because that's been illegal for like 3 years now.
Mm-hmm. And even more enforced now, particularly over center. So, yeah, it's like I think he probably recognized it. But it's just one of those things. It's like, you know, particularly, I mean, watch it so many years with Michael Bennett and that. You try to anticipate what the count's going to be so you can get a little bit of an edge and get some pressure and all that stuff. But that was very costly and one that, you know, just kind of set the tone of what was a very strange game.
Speaking of strange, I thought Russell Wilson's three interceptions were uncharacteristically careless. What did you make of those three mistakes?
Well, I mean, and I think what it comes down to, and we've seen this, and I think this is the bad byproduct of the let Russ cook philosophy, because the more you throw, the more you have a chance to make turnovers. And if you look back, I mean, you know, once you start to get above, you know, 35, 36 attempts or so, which, you know, that's going to be the case, then you put yourself in a position to have those turnovers. And of course, now you get into overtime, and the offensive line did such a great job of buying him time. But now Vance Joseph went to the blitz package so crazy, 5-6 guys coming in, that now the sacks started coming in the overtime. And that put the pressure on and put the team in position to make the mistakes. But, you know, that's one of the bad byproducts of the let Russ cook philosophy. If you throw it too much, one bad thing can happen, and that could be an interception. The other thing can be a sack.
John, you mentioned the blitz package. I agree with you. I think they rattled Seattle. The one thing, I don't think other teams will be able to replicate that, though. Arizona has incredibly unique personnel in which they end up having a lot of guys that can rush the passer. They don't play conventional down linemen. So they were putting seven guys on the line of scrimmage, and Seattle had no idea which ones were going to blitz and which were dropping back into coverage. And I think that's a lot of what they ended up having trouble adjusting to in overtime.
Well, but it's unusual. In the early part of the game, you know, one of the bad parts that Vance Joseph put himself in is that, you know, he was pretty much going man. Now, again, he's a big blitz guy and all that stuff, and they went man. But when you go man, that opens the door for Russell Wilson, because Russell then now knows he has a chance to run, because, you know, with the zone and all that stuff, you have guys kind of waiting there to see if you can catch him. But when you go man, I mean, now you have that open field, and you saw that Russell had his best day running the football, what, since 2018. And so that was the tough part about it. But then, you know, they settled into the blitz and came like crazy. And you're right, they put as many guys as they can toward the line of scrimmage to kind of keep you guessing. I thought the weird part is, how about the fact that Isaiah Simmons in overtime gets the one interception, which was probably the worst one that Russell threw. And, you know, he's only played five plays in the game Sunday. That's it, five. And he's the eighth pick in the draft, that positionless player that they thought was going to be turning that defense around. And I think the one thing that was very evident, that without Chandler Jones, and particularly the two injuries they had at defensive end, they don't have a pass rush that's conventional.
You look at the Seahawks defense, and they don't either. I wonder about this defense. What is a realistic fix other than hoping Jamal Adams gets healthy and that Snacks Harrison still has something left in the tank?
Yeah, and it still looks like they need something else at defensive end. Again, I think Benson Mayoa has done exceedingly well, but again, if you can't get the quarterback hits, you don't get the, you know, it allows Kyler Murray to come back. Now, and again, in the first half, I thought the defense did a really good job. Quentin Dunbar did a good job in coverage. You know, for the most part, even though he got close to 100 yards, they had contained DeAndre Hopkins. You know, Larry Fitzgerald, Fitzgerald was only available for, like, you know, short little screen passes and stuff like that, or short little passes. And then in the first half, I mean, what was it, like 10 yards rushing other than the 20 yards that Murray had? And so I thought that did a good job, and they were holding him to very limited type of things. But then things started to open up a little bit, and that's the ability, once you give a quarterback like Kyler Murray no chance to get hit, that he eventually gets into a little bit of a groove and a rhythm.
We will have some injuries to update with the Seahawks. Chris Carson missed about the final three quarters. He didn't play in the second half because of a midfoot sprain. Bob Condotta, the Seattle Times, reporting this morning that it's not believed to be serious. We'll find out more about that. John, talking about the pass rush, Carlos Dunlap apparently tweeted from the sidelines yesterday in the Bengals-Browns game.
Nice.
I made a posting for his house.
Yeah.
6,000 square feet, city view, huge balcony, four-bedroom, in one of the best school districts for sale. He's doing everything he can to get out of Cincinnati. Is that someone Seattle should look at?
I consider it. Now, the question is going to be if they can fit it under the cap. That might be a little bit difficult because, you know, he has been a pretty high-paid defensive end. Now, again, he's not that Leo, but he is, I would imagine, a pretty good five technique. But I think at this stage, you got to consider everything because, you know, the pass rush just isn't there. And, you know, you felt at some point it was going to catch up, and this was the game it caught up. And sure, I mean, you know, this team's still right now the number one seed because it's 5-1, and you know, but now you leave yourself vulnerable to Green Bay, Tampa Bay for the number one seed, and now you're back in the division race in a time right now when you have a bunch of division games coming up. So that becomes a tough thing. And understand that you know, when you make trades now, it's that much tougher because you don't get the immediate impact, because it takes 6 days to be able to you know, get the guy through COVID testing and to get him in the building. And so that's why most, Mike Florio brought this up last night on NBC, that, you know, they think most of the trades need to be done by Wednesday or Thursday, because now you're talking about whatever you get this week, you can now maybe use in week 8.
I don't know if the Bengals even have internet to know whether or not Carlos Dunlap put his home up on the market, seeing as they're cheap. So that's unfortunate. I really wonder, because I feel like, John, they do need to make some sort of move, but I don't know what's realistic given their cap situation and, of course, the draft picks that they have.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they've got, what, 6 draft choice, I think, if my memory serves me right. And, you know, let's put it this way. Particularly, you know, they're going to have to clear some cap room or do some things like that to do a Dunlap. But, I mean, you know, what you're talking about in a lot of these trades is that, you know, you trade a 6th-round pick and you get the player and you have to give up maybe a 7th-round pick so you can get them for a 6, because that's the way the last couple of trades have worked. And, you know, it may not necessarily have to be a draft choice this year. Now, again, you're dealing with the Bengals, you know, of course, when you dial that rotary phone that they have and they answer. And, of course, they look on the black and white TV to see what's going on. That it's they don't like to make trades, but something needs to happen.
All right, Professor, we always appreciate it. And we'll be tuned in to you right after the Pete Carroll show today. John, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, John.
Okay, thanks.
All right. It is Danny and Gallant. There's a report out. Odell Beckham Jr. Texted Josina Anderson that he suffered a torn ACL.
Man,
his season is over.
Bummer.
It was a pretty thrilling comeback that Cleveland made in spite of him. One of four games that ended up being decided in the final minute, including Seattle's. What was the most costly play for Seattle in this game? There's a number of ones to choose from. We'll let you decide next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I don't know how many times we threw tonight, but we just made some errors.
First and goal. Russell takes a shotgun snap. Carson, oh no! It's picked off, going the other way. It's Buda Baker down the near sidelines.
He just made a good play. I mean, he read it and made a good play.
Russell never saw him, and he steals the ball away.
None of those had to happen, you know, and so I know he's real disappointed about that for sure.
Russ scampers out of trouble, right side, throws. And throws it incomplete over the top, and actually Peterson intercepts in the end zone.
I don't think you can be frustrated about those, because we made so many of those great plays, like in those moments like that, and that was just an unfortunate play, but that's on me.
Just a quick throw, and it's intercepted by Arizona. Russell was just trying to dump it over the middle, and the ball is picked off by Isaiah Simmons right in the middle of the field.
But out of window. Guy made a good play.
The third pick thrown tonight. I'm not sure what he was thinking or who he was throwing to.
The thing about Russ is Russ will never stop. Like, he will always want more because he expects more of himself.
And that's the hope coming out of this one. Shout out 28 Days Later for the fantastic soundtrack. I saw this game, Danny, and thought to myself that if Russ is less careless on one of those three moments, that maybe we have a different outcome. Specifically, I would say the one in overtime, but I had a hard time trying to rationalize any of the three. You know, like, there wasn't a moment where I thought to myself, oh, I can really understand it, even though Russ was, I think, giving a good explanation for, at the very least, the second interception where they took the shot and Patrick Peterson intercepts in the end zone after DK stopped running.
The first one is the most costly, right? They're at the doorstep of scoring a touchdown, and then it gets returned 90 yards. But the fact that DK Metcalf, the incredible effort he had to run down Buda Baker, I mean, he didn't have the angle and he was behind. I would actually like to see, they gave a next gen stats about how fast he ran, which was like 22.6 miles an hour.
Doesn't it sort of take away from him, by the way? Like, 22 miles per hour doesn't seem that fast.
I want to know the distance he ran. How much further he ran than Buda Baker, because it was like he was on the outside lane in a track meet and he caught the guy on the inside lane. He caught the guy with less distance to run. It was incredible. So it didn't end up costing him on the score. I honestly, that first one is probably a little careless, but I just think Russ thought he had it. He thought it was a gimme putt, and he took it for granted a little bit. And Buda Baker, I didn't think the other two were careless. I thought the other two were him trying to make plays and him feeling the pressure of, we're not doing as much on offense and it's not clicking and it's not happening. And he tried to make something happen. The third one was forced, and the second one was, he thought DK was spinning out and going deep, so he was going to give him a chance to get it at the corner of the end zone. And DK didn't go deep, so it basically became an arm punt.
Right. The question is, do you throw it away there, or do you let Russ decide to make the play? So I'll allow the second one. The first one, though, it's a squished field, and I understand they've been practicing it this way, but you're basically lobbing a pass to the sideline.
Yeah.
And if there's any player who can make any sort of break on the ball, that is a layup, pick six. And again, credit to DK Metcalf for running him down. The overtime interception, too, I'm really struggling with that one. I mean, it just felt unnecessary. They weren't in a rush, right? I mean, why did they feel the need to throw the ball straight away the way that they did? And clearly, Russ didn't actually read the blitz correctly, which is a surprising thing because we're generally expecting him to pick up blitzes exceptionally well.
They didn't handle the blitz as well in
no.
overtime.
They didn't.
It was completely, and some of that is the pickup, and I don't want to hear anybody complain about Travis Homer ever again. I don't want to. He was out with a knee bruise, and if anybody saw what
he
happened
was missed.
With the guy. Yeah.
He was
yeah.
missed.
Yeah, the guy that everybody else wanted to get opportunities didn't pick up the blitz as well as Travis Homer did. So I want everybody to recognize this. All the, something for the haters out there. I found myself more mad about two penalties. Mm. One that I thought was bogus, and the other one was just kind of inexplicable. The penalty on Bobby Wagner, both Arizona had two touchdown drives in the second half that were basically sustained by penalties.
Yes.
The first one was absolutely a bad call. It was an unnecessary roughness, and I would like to hear how Dave Wyman reacted to the penalty on Bobby Wagner.
All right, bunch set on the left side. Murray is looking that way. Now he throws in behind the intended receiver. Bobby Wagner hits the intended receiver, Arnold, but the ball was past him, and I think we might get a call against Bobby here against a defenseless receiver, and that's too bad.
Pick it up.
Personal foul. Unnecessary roughness. Defense, number 50. That 15-yard penalty will be enforced from the previous spot. Automatic. First down.
It's such a split-second thing, and it's the optics, how it looks, and that's how they're calling it. If the guy hadn't fallen down, they probably wouldn't have thrown the flag.
It's a tight end. I mean, he's running over the middle of the field. That guy deserves to be stuck, and just because he reacted in a kind of way, come on.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed. I wanted more velocity from Wyman there.
You saw it first.
Yeah, you did with the, oh, come on. But I wanted to hear, no, all roughness is necessary. It's very necessary. I wanted a little bit of that. The other one, and the one that probably played a more direct role in the outcome, is Arizona had lined up for a field goal attempt. They kicked the field goal, and then Benson Mayoa jumped off sides, but it looked like they were going to decline that. And then Mayoa gets flagged for leverage, which is, you can't jump over the center guard gap. And if you try to jump over the opposing lineman at all, you can't touch them. Right? Like that's the rule. And at no point could you use one of your teammates for leverage. And what they ruled is that he touched the shoulders of both Arizona offensive linemen as he tried to jump over. It was an automatic first down. The Cardinals took the points off the board and then they ended up scoring a touchdown.
Is this not the Bobby Wagner rule? Because
it is.
There was so much jumping over the field goal offensive line by him, by Cam Chancellor, too.
Well, now you can't.
You can't even do it at all.
You can't do it at all anymore.
Yeah.
So I think this was a mistake, not by Mayoa, in that that's what he intended to. I think it happened because he jumped off.
Yeah, you said that. I'm intrigued by that possibility. Whatever the case, sometimes it's as simple as you just forget the rule. And I think it might have been one of those. That is something that all these guys should know if they're in on special teams, that you can't do something like that, even if it is a high leverage situation and you feel the need to block it. I mean, take the field goal. It's a touchdown game, you know? What are the odds of Arizona getting a touchdown down the stretch? Maybe they're pretty high, but they made it easier for Arizona because the Cardinals were settling there, you know, kicking a field goal where it felt like they were actually doing some damage, and now all of a sudden you've given them new life. And I know that some people don't subscribe to the idea of momentum, but it really just changed the feel of that game entirely. And Seattle was very conservative offensively the next possession that they had.
Do you second guess those play calls?
Yes. I don't like the 3rd and 2 stretch play to Hyde. And that's legitimately the only run that I didn't like. I felt it's 3rd and 2. You have Russell Wilson. Russ is smart enough to take a sack if there's nothing open downfield, but with the way that he had been scrambling on the night, you wanted the ball in his hands. He almost ran for 100 yards in this one, and it was on, what, like 5 scrambles? He was, I think, very lethal from that aspect of things, and instead they gave a stretch play to a guy who was a north-south runner.
I found myself, and I'm usually really nitpicky about game management, I loved all of Seattle's time score situation decisions here. I love the fact that they went for it on 4th and 2 from the 3 and ended up scoring that touchdown. I didn't have a beef with the 3 straight runs.
Interesting.
I thought that they gave themselves a shot to win and that was the right thing to do in that situation because you could burn almost half the clock there and you don't want to risk an incompletion. If you throw an incompletion there, you dramatically change the odds of Arizona being successful. That's what I thought. I thought it was the right risk-reward management, but they ended up not getting it. I mean, man, they were 1 2-yard rush away from winning that. They were 1 2-yard rush away from taking knees.
Yep. Yep, and then the game, though, got a little bit uglier from there. I think there was a moment, too, on one of those plays where there's 4 seconds left on the play clock and they ran the play off, and there were some that were frustrated that they ran the play with 4 seconds left on the clock because of the Cardinals having that last 2 seconds to kick the field goal. It's Danny and Gallant. What was the most costly play for Seattle? 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Was it Russell's first interception, his overtime interception, the Benson Mayo, a penalty? Shoot those at us on the text line. Coming up next, what's your level of panic? And I feel like asking a question that not many of you are going to say, oh, 10. But with the Cardinals all of a sudden the contender, how are you feeling right now? It's Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I woke up this morning to several different messages, but one particularly caught my eye on the Twitter, which was, it's inexcusable, and both John Schneider and Pete Carroll should come under serious fire for this. I found myself thinking, like, serious fire for being 5-0 for the first time in franchise history and going on the road against a pretty good divisional opponent. Nobody thinks that the Cardinals are terrible, and losing a game in overtime and was, look, Seattle wasn't, it's not like that was a pleasant game to watch. You came away saying, like, oh, that was fulfilling. I thought when they lost, it was going to be because their offense just didn't get going. And this was a game. They had 377 yards of offense in the first half. They scored on 5 of their 6 drives. They were a buzzsaw, and then they went flat. They were not as effective in the second half, and they couldn't make up for it. But I don't find myself thinking that this loss changes the way I think about Seattle. Reaffirms some of the flaws. They don't have a pass rush. But Kyler Murray is kind of the antidote to any pass rush. They do depend on their quarterback being really good, but I think that's true for most elite teams. And their defense, if you're going to ask that defense to get a stop, you're going to sit there with your fingers crossed, your eyes squished, and absolutely be sweating that out like the worst bet you've ever made in your life.
It was a reality check for me, Danny. I thought this offense was unstoppable against the Vikings. It was slowed down in the first half, and against the Cardinals, it was slowed down in the second half. And I think you got to take a look at the film and both of those games and wonder, okay, well, what went wrong? But I am with you 100% on the defensive side of things, and this is not me making excuses for the defense. The defense isn't good, but let's be consistent here. You know, a couple of weeks ago, a lot of you guys were saying, oh, well, they're making plays when they need to. Well, let's be consistent here. The defense suffered a reality check, and that's why they lost. Like,
man, those last 3 drives by Arizona, those last 3 drives that they had, they faced 1 third down.
Yeah.
They faced 1 third down. It was the 3rd down right before they kicked the game winning field goal. First possession of overtime, that last possession in regulation, and then the game winning possession. They faced 1 third down. It was, you didn't come close to stopping them.
Right.
Did not come close to stopping them. I agree with you. And I tend to think when you talk about defenses playing, making plays when it counts, even good red zone defense, those things, I believe, catch up with you. I don't think there's really such a thing as a bend but don't break defense. I think eventually that just means they haven't snapped yet.
And you went up against a guy who I think is the perfect antidote for your defense because he's able to move around and it's difficult to pressure him. But I got a couple of messages myself this morning, Danny. One of them was, look, I don't want you to get in trouble, but Ken Norton Jr., what's going on here at defensive coordinator? And I will just say this, and I know there are other people that feel the same way, like, why is he in charge of the defense? What would firing him accomplish? That's my question to you. Because I'm not going to act like I feel like he's doing a great job. I'm just going to say, that's what a loser team does in the middle of a season. You're 5-1, and all of a sudden, the defense, which has been consistently through 6 weeks, all of a sudden you're going to say, yeah, we need to get rid of Ken Norton Jr. here, and that's going to fix all the issues. The issue is personnel, right? It's not a matter of the coaches. No matter how you feel about Ken Norton Jr. or the defense that Pete's been running, they don't have enough pass rushers. And in the secondary, when someone like Shaquille Griffin goes down or Quentin Dunbar goes down, that means Trey Flowers comes in, and Trey Flowers is a giant bullseye for any team that goes up against him.
I didn't think he was bad yesterday. I agree with you. I think that people are going to try and pick on him. I felt that their secondary played well yesterday. I think that was an improvement. I don't think the secondary was the problem. Pass rush is. Pass rush absolutely is. And overall, I agree. I don't think firing the defensive coordinator accomplishes anything. I think that this is scheme slash personnel. Seattle plays the defense it plays, and it has the personnel it has. I think it will get better when Jamal Adams comes back. But I actually, this wasn't like the Dallas game where receivers are running by Seattle's DBs and you're getting gouged and blown up for big plays. I felt like that some of the more devastating, some of the bigger impact plays that they had were either Kyler Murray running around or them throwing to running backs or tight ends underneath or wide receivers near, that it, they didn't go over the top of Seattle's defense at all, which I think overall, like, that would be the biggest fear people have. I thought that was an improvement.
I'm with you in that, yes, they have not allowed the big plays, but I heard Collinsworth talking about this on the last drive. Why is Flowers playing like 15 yards off when you're in a situation where every single yard is precious?
Very fair. And that's the reason. It's because you didn't want to get burnt deep. You gave up things underneath. There's no doubt about that. Level of panic, 1 to 10. 10 is, oh my God, everything I thought was true in this world and that I could count on has turned out to be a lie and the sky is falling. Level 1 is, yawn, I expected this. This doesn't impact my feelings about this team at all. If they don't have those penalties, if they get 1 yard, this was a fluky loss and it doesn't impact me at all. I think I'm about a 3 after that game, where I look at it and say, you play 4 games that go down to the final minute and you've won 3 of them. You're more fortunate than you are unlucky. And this is probably an accurate reflection of who this team is. They lost this game. They earned every ounce of this loss. And it's frustrating, and the flaws are not one-offs. You can see some of them that can be traced back, but this doesn't change what I think this team is capable of.
I'm at a 2.63, and the reason I'm so specific with this 2.63.
It's like you should just use like Price is Right rules, though. I guess with Price is Right, you can't go over because you go 2.99. So you get anything under me, and I get all of the overreaction people who want their pound of flesh.
Exactly. And look, I'm rounding up from actually like a, 6.2. Hang on. I can't even do the math in my head. So I'm just going to keep going here. 2.63. Here's why. When you look at Russell Wilson, this game, I think, is an anomaly. 3 interceptions. I am a little concerned that some of the interceptions this year have been particularly careless, a la that interception he threw against the Baltimore Ravens last year. Like, I think the intercept.
I thought of the exact same thing when we saw that first interception. I was like, that's kind of like that where he thought he saw it and he just didn't put enough mustard on it.
Right. So there's been a couple of those this year, which has me a little bit concerned. But this offense is a dreadnought. The Carson injury, a little concerning. The defense is what it is, and I think for the most part, you aren't going to go up against many quarterbacks that are as evasive as the Catman, Kyler Murray, and that should, at the very least, put you in a level playing field. And the other thing is, too, like I feel like you puked it away, which at the end of the day isn't necessarily a bad thing if you want to talk about the big picture, because I think it was your mistakes that gave Arizona the win, and credit to Arizona for getting this W, but, I mean, and they gave you their own gifts. But I feel like Seattle making mistakes is really the reason that they lost last night.
Scale of 1 to 10. 1 being, that's going to happen. 10 being, Go ahead and put your numerical suggestion where you're at on the panic meter. 1 to 10, we'll tally those up. And then bring in Brock Heward next. He joins us for Blue 42 on Danny and Gallant.